We've got the wonderful Dennis Stewart back with us for a Friday. Welcome, Dennis.
Thank you, Amanda. That was very nice of you to say
that. Oh, it's always lovely to have you here.
Thank you.
Now, Dennis, last week you started to discuss the controversial topic of anti-aging, incorporating a particular group of herbs. You talked about the herb hawthorn berry and its broad spectrum benefits on the cardiovascular system. Mm-hmm. Today you want to discuss two more famously used herbs around the world to resist aging. Can you tell us about them?
Well, today we're going to follow on from what we said last week when we discussed the importance of hawthorn berry being seen as a general tonic with great benefits, proven benefits, as well as some clinical benefits in supporting particularly the ageing cardiovascular system. Today I want to look at two herbs which similarly I have promoted for years and used them myself, which I think fit into this concept of there are ways of helping resist ageing by lifestyle, diet, and particularly with herbs seen perhaps as medicinal foods. And I want to talk about two very famous remedies. First of all, I want to take up an analysis of the remarkable herb ginkgo biloba, which I frequently mention here and there on the programs. But today, if we get a chance, we'll look at it much more deeply and see its ramifications to resist ageing. And then thirdly, what we will look at is the remarkable historic remedy of Panax ginseng and the way that it is not just used in China and Asia these days, but how it has come into Western herbal medicine and has become a member of the team of herbs seen as useful to resist the ravages of ageing.
Well, we could all use that.
A fascinating topic.
Raymond from Arcadia Vale is done. Hi, Raymond.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. Thanks for holding. You want to talk about one of my favourite topics, restless leg syndrome.
Yeah, well, more or less akathisia. My partner suffers from akathisia and I want to know if there's anything that can be treated for it.
What symptoms is she having with it, Raymond?
Just restlessness all over her body, her legs. She does a lot of pacing around the house and stuff.
Okay.
And
so it's not just a nighttime situation?
No, it's during the day as well.
Okay. And she's had it all of her life?
No, she's recently just come off antipsychosis medication.
Okay.
And they say that's the side effect from that.
Yes. Because this term restless leg or restless leg syndrome is a broad term.
Yep.
And can cover a number of possibilities and a number of symptom experiences. Most frequently, I hear of it and see it in my rooms as a condition that is most active at night and really causes people distress, particularly nocturnally. But your point about your partner having the condition subsequent to coming off antipsychotic medication also emphasises the point that there is no one cause behind it. However, we've got to look at ways of perhaps palliating or lessening the syndrome until perhaps it burns itself out or takes its own course. My associate here today who conducts the program is somewhat an expert, by the way, Raymond, on this condition, restless leg. So for a moment I'll give deference to her and she can tell you about her remarkable remedy.
Well,
so take it away, Amanda.
Thank you. Well, I suffer from restless legs. For me, the only thing that works for me is I use cypress oil and I use it topically. A couple of in one of those rollerball glass tubes.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So I'd probably put about it depends on, you know, how bad she is, but I'd go around between 10 and 20 drops personally.
Yep.
But some people do a lot less. And then you just throw in some fractionated coconut oil with it. And then just rub it on her legs. I guess you could try other parts of her body, I suppose. Nothing internally or anything, but just, you know, rub it on legs. I do it before I go to bed. And I don't have a problem when I go to sleep. But, you know, it's not, you know, guaranteed, but it works. It works for me. And actually, a lady rang up last week, I think it was, and she said that she had restless legs, and she started drinking lemon myrtle tea, and that seemed to help it.
Okay. Yep.
So you could give that a go.
Well, there's two recommendations. And look, again, I come back to the point that it's a complex condition, poorly defined or understood, and there are a number of ways that people help the condition, put it that way. And Amanda has done a good job in going over her own experience of using a preparation topically. Now, let us emphasise that in the point that she was making, that there's a topical application, not an oral preparation. And a listener a couple of weeks ago mentioned the lemon myrtle tea, which is a tea that can be used if one wants to as a means of addressing the situation. So there are a couple of options, but my approach would be along these lines. And again, I would suggest that they be worked through, keeping in mind that, in my opinion, there is no one particular remedy, but my approach to start with would be to suggest the use of a combination of calcium and magnesium. You can get a CalMag supplement from your health food store or pharmacy. That's not a bad starting base. Both those minerals have a relationship to muscular syndromes, cramping type conditions. Try that as a start. Move on from there to appreciate the significance of B group vitamins as potential regulating factors on milder levels of neurological disorders. Moving on from that, I would suggest also that you contemplate using the herb kava. Now, kava is a well-known herb. It's legitimate to use. It comes in a tablet or a capsule form, and it is used all around the Pacific region. It is a relaxant remedy and reflects itself to some degree in muscle relaxation, and it could be used, certainly used, as a nighttime remedy. But there's nothing against using it. One or two tablets during the day, keep within the dose range. I get good results with kava, unusually good results, not just in attempting to treat this condition, but other neurological syndromes. So there's some starting bases for you. Just work through them, see how you go. I'm sure there's something in there that may be of benefit to you.
Oh, and also I want to just say the roller bottle that I was talking about was a 10-mil one.
Right, yeah, okay.
Yeah, now, for me, I can't take magnesium because I have the opposite effect. It makes my legs feel weird. So, why I tried the magnesium and it didn't work for me. So, too much dancing. So I tried the cypress oil. But whatever works, really. I mean, you've got quite a few options there.
All right. Thank you very much for that. Thanks,
Raymond. Good. Have a great day.
Okay.
And then we're going to talk about another favourite topic of mine, menopause heat. Hi, Renee from Gateshead. How are you going?
How are you?
Good, thank you. I can relate to that completely. Hopefully Dennis has got an answer for you.
She might have the answer.
No,
for this,
I
Renee.
Don't.
Tell me about your experience of Renee. You're experiencing a lot of heat. Are you? Is that the problem?
Yes, well, I've been, I've reached menopause probably 2 years ago, but I still find some nights I have to spend like an hour on the tiles on the floor just to cool off or to sleep.
That's no good.
Putting in an ice bath. I'm actually struggling and I'm thinking I'm doing all the right things. So when it first started, I had, I'd wake up really quickly and dripping in sweat.
Yes.
And now I don't get much. I'm just still hot. I'm on estradiol, which is the estrogen, the Sandrina gel, half a sachet of that a day. I'm on the Prometrium, 100 milligram, one of those a day, and testosterone 0.02%, which is people think women don't need that, but I found I feel better on it.
And they were prescribed by your GP?
Yes, GP and another GP who deals in women's health as such. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Look, I might attack it from a, or not attack it, but address it from a more simpler perspective. Your symptom, of course, of heat and also perspiration is a fairly common symptom of what used to be referred to as the change. And in Europe, I might surprise you when I say that the first stop for helping this condition is to use the common, very popular and common herb known as sage. Now, sage, sage, if you were to Google it, you would find that it even goes as far as to refer to it as an antihydrotic remedy, which technically means that it can address even perspirational dysfunction, which is typical of some menopausal states. It is a herb that is used popularly and simply just as a herbal tea, which makes it a very economical way of addressing the problem to get some benefit, certainly less expensive than what you may be paying for what you're using presently. I could see no reason why you could not take it in conjunction with what you're taking and to gauge the benefit of it. So that's always these days, keeping in mind the cost of medications, even complementary medications, herbal medications, nutritional supplements. The growing cost of these things is embarrassing and is likely to get worse. So start with just using some sage tea. Also, also, don't forget the major remedies that are used within herbal medicine, and I suggest they be used not together but sequentially, testing each one of them. Depending on how you go with sage, if that is not an adequate help, then move on to the herb known as chaste tree. Now, chaste tree is botanically known as Vitex agnus castus, and it is probably one of the most popular remedies used around the Mediterranean region to address the change as an entity, not just to address one symptom, but some of the hormonal factors behind it. Vitex is still an undiscovered remedy, or chaste tree to use its popular name, is still an undiscovered remedy by many women in addressing a lot of hormonal ups and downs, which can characterise, of course, the transit through the menopause. Thirdly, don't forget products in the marketplace that are available, particularly from your pharmacy, that are based on the herb black cohosh. Now, black cohosh is an American herb. It has a very significant category of what we call phytoestrogens, and it is popularly presented in well-known available packages from your pharmacy. It needs to be used strictly in accordance with the dosage. Don't abuse it. So there are a couple of remedies, and the I should say, finally, one that's also very popularly used and is seen sometimes as an alternative to black cohosh if you're not getting the results with those other things that I've mentioned, is the herb red clover. Red clover is botanically known as trifolium, and very frequently you will find in packages, particularly in the pharmacy, red clover being labelled with terms that indicate things like trifolium or trifolia. Trifolium pratense is its botanical name. Red clover is its common name. It's got a very strong body of phytoestrogens, which explains to some degree the modulating effect that it can have on overall menopausal symptoms. So there's a bit of a run-through for you. Don't try them all at once. Just try one at a time and start with sage, the cheapest and simplest.
And please let me know if it works, because I'm very interested.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Renee.
I'll just try start with the sage. Thank you. Thanks, Jenna.
Thanks very much. Have a great day. Now, we've got Keith on the line from North Lambton. Hi, Keith.
Oh, good afternoon. Good afternoon, Dennis.
Hello, Keith. How are you?
Yeah, look, not too bad, mate. Good. I've spoken to you previously about issues with prostate.
Yes.
And I take saw palmetto.
Yes.
Stinging nettle root and echinacea.
Yes.
And also, I've previously had problems with a UTI.
Yes.
And unfortunately, it's hit me again.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm under medicine. But
yes.
As well as those three, I also take Demonose.
Yes, good.
In cranberry.
Good.
So basically, I'm just wondering, am I missing something, Dennis,
okay.
particularly on the UTI front?
Okay.
Anything else that I should be taking?
Well, the substances you've mentioned, Demonose in particular, have a good reputation as preventative devices. That is, lessening the onset, the likelihood, the frequency of urinary tract infections. The thing is, you're probably only using, a teaspoonful of the powder?
No, I've got tablets.
Okay.
They're 500 milligrams.
Okay.
Look, and I take two or three a day of those.
Okay.
And I take on the cranberry front,
yep.
just to take one a day, I take one to two.
Okay.
Dosage
is pretty important.
Yes.
If I were to use Demonose, I would prefer it in the simpler powder form.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying what you're using is not good. It probably is, but... my best results, I note in practice, is to use the powder, which has sustained minimal manufacturing intervention. Some people don't like the powder, and therefore the tablets is a good alternative.
Mm.
I would suggest, to start with, you go down the pathway of using Demonose, say, which, by the way, to listeners, is a very safe and reasonably new way of addressing chronic UTIs, but two teaspoonfuls of the powder would be what I would suggest as a means of helping the condition. And with the cranberry, the preparation you're taking may well be good, but again, the literature tends to point in the direction of the liquid, the cranberry juice, as being a good thing to consider also, perhaps to reinforce the use of the tablet or to share with the tablet preparation, again, falling back on the original way in which cranberry was used or trialled, and that was a liquid preparation, the cranberry juice. Fall back on that. What you're doing is correct, but you might need to just up your dose a bit, and if you start to become symptomatic, elevate your dose even further. Both those things are exceedingly safe. But let me just say, what you need to have on hand, particularly for the first experience or onset of symptoms, is the herb known as buku, B-U-C-H-U, buku. Buku is well known, well defined, called up for ages in British pharmacopoeias. It's called up very positively in the British Herbal Pharmacopoeia of 1983, and it has a proven track record as a urinary tract antiseptic of keeping the urinary tract free of, reasonably free of bacterial activity. And I tend to recommend it to my patients to use in conjunction with Demonose and cranberry as a support agent if and when symptoms of a UTI begin to assert themselves. Frequently, it can abort the episode and lessen the need to revert to antibiotic medication.
While I take echinacea as part of my prostate prevention...
Yes, that's good.
...actually help the UTI?
Look, echinacea has an affinity for prostate gland problems. That's based on the European experience. I've always seen echinacea as a broad-spectrum immunosupportive remedy that may have some benefit more than just around the prostate and general immune enhancement. I would be keen for you to use something a little bit more specifically antimicrobial, and this is where the buku, I think, would give you an option. Not to use all the time, and certainly stay with the echinacea, because for prostate management I consider it useful. But just do what I've suggested, and also have some buku tea, which you can get from my rooms in New Lambton if you have trouble getting it anywhere else.
Yeah, okay. Oh, thanks very much, Dennis. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Keith.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks, Keith. The fact that you frequently mention references and books to support your use and recommendations for herbal medicine use. Is this really important? Because after all, isn't herbal medicine more based on the historical use of the herb that you've been talking about?
Well, that's a very good question, Amanda. That's a very provocative question. Look, one of the reasons is that when one talks about herbs, there's a degree of scepticism out there still in the community, and particularly amongst some of the medical profession, pharmaceutical profession, who have had some unfortunate experiences of people, patients, clients presenting who have been doing silly things by learning something about this or that herb, which has not done them any good and which may well have hurt them. So when I refer to anything in my talks on radio, or certainly in my many years of lecturing, I like to reinforce my confidence in what I'm recommending as far as herbal options are concerned by referring to references, texts, which are very effective and very soundly based and highly regarded as, if you like, parameters for the healthy, useful prescribing of herbal medicine. One can say anything off the top of one's head, and it can be just a lot of nonsense. What you have to do these days is demonstrate that despite herbal medicine being a very, very traditional, system of healing going back hundreds, if not thousands of years, in the modern world in which we live, the scientific world in which we live, it's good to be able to support that tradition by looking at some of the science which can increasingly explain how the traditional knowledge of herbs and the traditional application of the herb has a credible basis. This is what has happened during my career. When I started more than 50 years ago, it was, even in this country, very much based purely on empiricism or, if you like, tradition. And that was good, but it wasn't good enough when we were, how can you call it, questioned by scientists and others at Macquarie University many years ago. We found that we did not have the skill to be able to talk the language that's required today. So I took it on myself as a teacher of herbal medicine to introduce the teaching of pharmacognosy into herbal medicine courses, which of course then draws on the modern herbal literature, particularly first-class European herbal literature. And this is where my mention on this program frequently about the excellent work of the German medical practitioner and brilliant phytotherapist, that's the more trendy term for herbal medicine practitioner, the work of Dr. Rudolf Weiss. And I emphasise that name again, Dr. Rudolf Weiss, his book simply entitled Herbal Medicine, it's an English translation, I recommend certainly to my pharmacy colleagues and to the medical professionals out there, whom I know many of them are interested in herbal medicine, purely just to know why many of their patients present already on herbal medicine. Weiss's text, in conjunction with the British Herbal Pharmacopoeia of 1983, which is readily available, those two texts have supported my lecturing and practice of herbal medicine for nearly 50 years. That's the reason why I emphasise, not just as a trendy academic exercise, no, I'm here and there mention references, papers, articles to support my contention that the tradition of herbal medicine can be increasingly supported and sustained by our increasing understanding of what it is in the herb that has made its reputation. That's why I frequently mention, perhaps too frequently, books and papers and articles to support what I've done for most of my life.
Well, it's good to have something to support what you're saying
It is indeed.
Thin air. Now, we've got Louise from Maryland on the phone. Hi, Louise. How are you going?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, thank you. Your son's got, is it Osgood Schlatter's?
Yes.
In the knees.
He's been struggling with it for quite a few years. He was very unwell at the end of last year, and he had mycoplasma, scarlet fever and whooping cough at the end of last year. And it's actually got a lot worse since then. And he just can't get any relief from it. We've seen many multiple doctors about it, but I'm just curious to know, is there anything that could help, that would help with the pain from it?
Is he using anything presently, Louise?
Only really Nurofen, okay, just to help with a bit of the pain. Other than that, that's about it.
Is he in constant pain?
Yes, he's in pretty much constant pain with it, but he's active, very active, and he plays soccer and trains 3 nights a week, and he wants to continue, but its pain is just a lot, that's all.
Is it mainly located around his knees, or where is it happening?
Just below the kneecap, below the kneecap where the tendon attaches. We've had all the scans and everything done. His knees are in good shape.
That's good.
Pain with it, yes.
That's good. Look, it's not a condition that I have a lot to do with, obviously. You've been seeing the specialists in it, which is obviously the way to go.
Yes.
It might not be a bad idea, however, to use the a preparation that I found useful for managing something like osteoarthritis. Now, I know this is not osteoarthritis, but what I'm going to say is a product that we spoke about last week, Glucosaplex. Glucosaplex. Yep. I would be happy to send you a container of that free of charge as a means of trying him on it. It may help. It's a long shot. It's not going to hurt him. It's a product that I developed. I will make sure that your boy gets a packet of that free of charge from the studio. You'll have to remain on, Louise, after I finish talking to you so that you can give your information to the receptionist. And I will take that back to my rooms. Try it. If it works, well and good. It's given him some relief. It's a long shot, but it can't
but
hurt.
Worth a try.
And it's not going to cost you anything.
Oh, well, I really appreciate your help with that. We've hit that point where we'll try.
I understand. You hang on. Give your information to the receptionist, Louise.
Thanks very much, Louise.
Thank you very much.
Okay,
thank you. Next on the line, we've got Brendan. Hi, Brendan from Mount Hutton. Now, we've only got a couple of minutes, so you want to talk about vitamin D tablets?
I do. Recently, I've had my annual checkup with my GP, and I'm in good health. And my doctor's now saying that your vitamin D level is low and you should be looking at taking a supplement. I'm in good health and I get regular enrollment out in the sun, which I thought would have been sufficient for me to get my daily dose of vitamin D. Is there a reason why people would not have sufficient vitamin D levels from being involved with the sun?
I have a particular view on this, Brendan, which is best not mentioned on radio.
Thank you.
Living in a country like Australia, I have difficulty in seeing how vitamin D deficiency could be as significant as what is presently being made out to be. Now, I could, if you like, talk sceptically. I'm not. All that I can say is that I'm an elderly man. I've never taken vitamin D tablets. I'm out in the sun. I was never inside as a kid. I have difficulty. I have difficulty unless there is a clinical reason as to why we need to take these things. And perhaps your doctor could give you some indication as to how he thinks this has happened. Let me just say, however, if you want to go down the pathway of getting a good a supplement that is useful, start to take a bit of cod liver oil.
Okay, thank you very much.
But again, I will not elaborate, put it that way, Brendan. I will not elaborate on some of these emphases, and I know I'm going to be shot down for this, so I will not go any further.
Thanks. I'd just like another view from the point of the angle of it to see whether it is a justified that I'm wanting to take it, and you've given me a bit more to look into, I guess.
Again, I could be completely wrong, but I hope I'm not.
No worries. Thanks, Dennis.
Thanks, Brendan.
All the best. Thank you. We've got about 45 seconds, Dennis.
I better apologise for any hurt that I may have affected there for people taking vitamin D. There are good reasons why some people need to take vitamin D as a supplement, so I'm not negating it.
Do people with the white hair?
Albinos?
Yes. Do they have to take it? Because aren't they affected by this, going out in the sun?
They need vitamin D, put it that way. I can't answer that question. I don't have a lot to do. I haven't got much hair left, but I still go out in the sun perhaps too much. I'm aware that one needs to have some protective devices. But, yeah, look.
Slip, slop, slap.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks, Dennis. We'll catch up with you next week on Health Naturally on 2NURFM.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.